Hello, friend. I'm so glad you're here. My name is Zach Holt, and this is Come to the Table. Some of our most intimate conversations happen at the kitchen table. Walls crumble as space is created to know one another more deeply. Hurt and heartache are replaced by hope and healing when we pull up a chair, let down our guard, and simply be who we are, where we are. In our time together, we will step into the shoes of others through recovery stories of redemption, offer resources and connections for those in need, and come together as a community starving for revival in our region. So if you're hungry, you came to the right place. We are really excited to be back with you all today. Really excited. Lindsay Black is back with us for round two. Lindsay is working with us this year, a student at Emmanuel, and thought we would just take some time to touch base and kind of autopsy and unpack the first semester that you have had with us in our delightfully calm and normal and mundane ministry.
Every time. Every time.
So tell us about your holidays. What were some of the highlights looking back?
Yeah, holidays. It was nice to have a break from school, from academics. I love it, but it takes a toll. I am married with three children, and I commute 40 minutes to school, so it was nice to lose the commute. It was nice to be home with my people, so be able to pour into them, because before I started school, I was a stay-at-home mom, and so it's been a big transition. So my kids were very excited to wake up, and mom was there, and bedtime, mom was there, and boo-boos, lunchtime, everything. So I enjoyed that, and then the normal mundane, you know, oh, well, it's December and the kids' closets haven't been switched over, so there's no sweaters, there's no sweatpants. Let's get that switched over, getting the house decorated for Christmas. So catching up, normal kind of run-of-the-mill things. So that was nice. We had my father-in-law and his wife come into town. So it was idyllic in the space of, like, just being home and no craziness, just normalcy and our normal and so since we're talking about ministry stuff today, our normal, but yeah, so it was good, and it was restful to a point. I'm still working on doing better about, like, my rest. I'm very good about, like, posturing a space for a restful you know, like, as a mom and a wife, like, that's important to me to have that restful space, but I'm still working on learning to do that for myself. Without having, like, insane guilt about it, right? Like, mom guilt. So anyway, that's something this semester that I'm working on doing a little better. We'll see how it goes, though.
So do you have what are some of your favorite, like, Christmas? Do you have traditions? You do Elf on a Shelf or Minch on a Bench?
No, we do It's Time for Bed, and then we go to bed. I love the creativity that I see people express in that, you know, mention a bench, off the shelf stuff. But for us, we have very, like, normal Christmas traditions. But mine start very early, typically. My Christmas tree goes up November 1st.
Nice.
Because if I'm going to spend that much time, I want to enjoy it. It's fun for me, and the kids really like it. Like, it's this kind of, like, the light in their eyes, the excitement the Advent, right? Ready for what's coming. And so that's our Christmas tradition, is, you know, November 1st, tree goes up. And then it's not everything's decorated that day, but it's like this slow, like, hey, let's pull that box out and put that stuff up. And hey, let's, so it my daughter said that this year, because it, of course, with school, it got messed up. And she's like, I felt like Christmas was really rushed this year. Like, we didn't have our normal, you know, flow of, like, slow and steady. She's like, it was just here and then it was gone. I was like, yeah, I felt that in my chest for sure. Next year, I learned from this year, and next year hopefully it'll, you know, take our time and slow it down. But it was nice to just incorporate, like, you know, we have a teenager now, you know, she's 16, like, all the way teenager, right? And so there is that space where I'm like, oh, like, that sacredness of, like, I don't know, childlike spirit is, luckily we're really blessed, she still very much has that. She's not trying to grow up too fast, but so just kind of, there was a lot of reminiscing, I think, this year, where the kids are settled into, like, they're not babies anymore.
Yeah.
So, and I'm like, okay, and this is still good. So.
Yeah, we, our Christmas was, it was really low key, and a lot of family, a lot of family time. I was kind of divided against, you know, it's just hard to get everybody together all at once. Mm-hmm. But there's something about Christmas and Thanksgiving, you know, gatherings with friends, all those things that just it can either be a really joyful time or it can be a really, really hard time, you know. And I think there are times, you may feel this way, but there are times when, like, the population that we deal with, the folks that are, you know, on the street, or folks that, you know, because of decisions they've made or just life circumstances, it's not a very, like, merry Christmas, you know. And so there's almost this sense of, I wouldn't say, like, guilt, but it's almost like a lament in the midst of all of the joy that I'm having, because there's a part of me that's like, yeah, but so-and-so's still in that tent, you know, behind the hillbilly, you know, or, you know, we have some of our guys that aren't able to go home, or those who can't see their kids, or, you know, different things like that. So, so I know it's a lot of fun for us. But there are times where it's like I kind of have these like fleeting moments of sadness where I like stop and, you know, it almost like it, I don't know, guilty maybe, yeah. Like feeling guilty for enjoying, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about that in the aspect of Advent, you know, we're getting ready to celebrate the birth of our Savior.
Mm-hmm.
But in that celebration, we know what happens next.
Yeah.
We're celebrating a birth that's going to lead to a death,
yeah.
To suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we can sit into those uncomfortable spaces where, yeah. You're like, mm-hmm. I don't feel good about this, but like your, mm-hmm. your story specifically, mm-hmm. is one of hope. Mm-hmm. And so to say, I can't celebrate,
mm-hmm.
really?
Yeah.
You know, you should, and you can.
Yeah.
And it is tough, though. I mean, I think it's a good thing you have feelings, right? Mm-hmm. But sit into, mm-hmm. them. You can mourn something and still celebrate in that. We can, mm-hmm. still celebrate the birth of our Savior. But know, like, we're going to mourn at a time where we sit with the suffering that comes, mm-hmm. with that.
Yeah.
So, it, you know.
Yeah.
I think you might be doing it more right than you think.
And I know, like, we, Christmas night, whenever we're at the park, downtown, mm-hmm. and had kind of a candlelight service there in the park, and did hot chocolate and blessing baskets and things like that. And you know, it's so there's I think we're blessed with opportunities to try and give back some, but I think at a certain point it's like there are times when the suffering can be so great that we witness and that we observe, that it kind of sticks to you even after. So like there was a night after the table that, it was 2 degrees too warm for this couple to stay at the Salvation Army. So, we drove them underneath the Anderson Street Bridge and, gave them some blankets. And I just had this moment where I'm sitting in my truck, like, crying because I'm looking at this couple like passing the other blankets to line the underside of a tractor and trailer thing that was down there so that they could at least get out of the wind a little bit. And so here they are crawling with these blankets underneath this trailer. And then it's like, it's hard to sit with that sometimes, you know, and then to go back. It was a similar kind of experience, I think, that we had whenever we got back from Kenya, how it's like, you see so much, you know, pain and loss out there, and we feel like we can only do, you know, just a drop in the bucket sometimes, mm-hmm. and then to leave, and sometimes the heaviness of those moments kind of sticks to you a little, yeah. bit. So the first semester that you've been with us, have you had any moments that were particularly sticky or impactful? What are some of the things you've experienced in the first semester that, for better or for worse?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So I was tickled pink, but I kind of sat with it and really prayed about it for a while when you invited me to come talk to the guys at 117.
Oh, yeah, that was special.
That was, I was, before I even knew what I was going to talk about or anything, I was just like, I felt so honored to go in and talk with these guys because like that's their safe place. Like that's the place that they're growing and they're doing so much. And so to be invited into their home was huge. And the fact that they were excited about it, you know, I wasn't like, we're going to let her do this. Everybody be cool. At that point, and it was good, is that I built a relationship and of consistency to that point with these guys. And so for them to be like, we're really excited that you're coming to talk to us. Mm-hmm. I was like, they're being really genuine right now. Mm-hmm. And it touched me to be able to have that opportunity. But then to go in and I'll start from the beginning on that story. Mm-hmm. So I was excited about it. I was praying about, okay, you said, just go in and talk to him. And I laughed because I was like, hey, I'm Lindsay. Or do you want me to like preach to them? Like, what was this supposed to be? But I was like, maybe that was the whole point. Like, sit into it and see where, God has you go. So I'm praying about it. And it's the week of. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, God, like, I know I do stuff last minute, but I was getting uncomfortable in not knowing what to do in that space because I wanted to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be flippant about it. And so I was praying, and I was in a class called Grief and Loss. And I was given a presentation about a book about grief and loss and different aspects and viewpoints. And so I was doing my final presentation, and it was very impactful for me because, as we talked about last time, my dad, he passed away incarcerated. Yeah. And so that was dealing with that. I didn't get to in a traditional sense. Mm-hmm. It was just, hey, you're dying. 3 weeks later, hey, you have cancer. Now you're really dying. And 3 weeks later, you're dead. Yeah. And there's no going to see him because of COVID restrictions, et cetera.
Sure.
And so sitting in that space, I was like, I felt really blessed to be able to use this class as a platform to process this space about my dad. And then I see so much of my dad's story in these guys and in this ministry, because he was addicted and he lived on the streets and all of those things. And so I was working on this project to finish out the semester with that. And it was, I was talking about my dad. And I printed out this picture from my wedding where my dad was, it was our father-daughter dance, and he's holding my hand. And I just remember when my dad was passing, like the biggest thing, and even reading this book, I was like, I just wanted to hold his hand. Like, I just wanted to like be there with him, like comfort him, like in some way, and just be connected with him, like let him know he wasn't alone. And so I printed this picture out, and I printed the picture out black and white because he was holding my hand. Mm-hmm. And then I color and I layered it. So then that was like our hands were the thing that were standing out of that.
That's cool.
And I had written like a page and a half about the book and what that picture meant and like how I processed. And so I was finishing this up Wednesday morning, which is when it was 2, because that's how I live my life. And you understand. And I was still praying. I was like, God, I'm supposed to talk to these guys tonight. You have to give it to me. Like, I don't know, because I'm not doing this in my own. Like, I don't want to lean on my own understanding in this space. I don't want to tell them how smart I am or what they should do or, some flippant dead space. And no joke, as I slid the picture into the frame and I looked at it, I mean, it was just, God was just, and this is what you're going to talk to them about tonight. And I remember after I had talked, you looked at me and you're like, a minute in, and I was like, why did we not sit into this space with these guys? Like, there's a daughter of an addict, somebody who's been on the other side of what these guys are trying to heal from. And so, it was so great. So I presented it in class, so I kind of got to have a dry run. Uh-huh. And then that evening went and presented it to the guys. And it was amazing to just see the response from them, to talk to them kind of really about this space that most of them haven't asked. Like, hey, to the people in their lives, their daughters, their wives, whomever, how did what I do affect you? Because most people don't ever do that. That's hard.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about how I hurt you. Like, that's not cozy. And so I kind of got to be this vessel to sit into that space to say, this is how it hurt. And not in a, and he was so bad. The thing that I sat into so much, if you remember, was the redemption of that space. Yeah. Even after the hurt and the abandonment, et cetera, right? That was the person I wanted to walk me down the aisle. That was the person that I wanted to know that I loved them no matter what. And in his death, that was the person that I wanted to comfort. I didn't want him to sit and suffer.
Yeah.
No matter what our lives looked like and, all of that baggage that goes with that. And so I got to tell the guys, like, this is possible. Like, in your recovery, no matter how bad you stepped in it, I mean, even if you threw it out and cussed it, no matter what you did, right, there's hope for a space of redemption in that, that you can still find love and healthy relationships, mm-hmm. even in ones that you have just butchered, and especially when it comes to a father-daughter mm-hmm. relationship. You know, because that's not an adult romantic relationship, right?
Sure.
Where, you know, I'll move on, I'll find somebody else. Like, no, you got a dad. Like, that's dad. And I feel blessed that, like, God gave me a soft enough heart to mm-hmm. step in that space. But really also, you know, to my dad's credit, you know, I was like, you're going to listen to me right now. And he did not want to, but he did. Mm-hmm. He did. He listened to me tell him about where I was hurt mm-hmm. and what failures I saw. And, you know, I never attacked him as like a human. Do you know what I'm saying? I wasn't like, because you're a piece of, et cetera, right? I was like, this is me. This is my story in this. Yeah. And I want you to know the part you played.
Yeah.
And he let me do that. That was the linchpin in it all. Like, that made it possible for me to be like, oh, he does actually care.
Yeah.
Like, his pride is not more important mm-hmm. than our relationship.
Yeah.
And that was it. And so that story's telling, because those guys related. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I mean, after that, like, they all opened up. Guys I didn't even know had kids were like, yeah, actually, this. Mm-hmm. And they started sharing things in that moment. It was great. And then it was super sweet. It was like the weeks after. Mm-hmm. They'd come up and be like, oh, hey, like, getting ready for the table mm-hmm. service. Mm-hmm. We'd be getting stuff out. And like, oh, do you need some help with that? And I'm like, oh, thanks. And it wasn't that they wanted to come help me. I'm sure they would have. But they're like, oh, hey, remember when you talked about this? And they wanted to share these things they've been, like, processing mm-hmm. since that. And so one of them even, it wasn't about his fault. It was actually about the fact that his dad was also an addict. He's like, I didn't realize I was allowed to be hurt. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize I was allowed to say that this hurt me. That's huge. That's huge, because a lot of these guys carry burdens, and mm-hmm. that's the reason their addiction grabs them mm-hmm. and doesn't let them go, because it gives them relief from this space of grief and suffering. You know, it's not to say, like, oh, the guy's an addict, he's a bad person. I'm like, no, he's probably dealing with some bad stuff, man.
Yeah.
So it was a good space to sit in. I would say that's probably my favorite, is just to sit in that space with those guys and build mm-hmm. that relationship mm-hmm. And let them know, like, you can be vulnerable and it's not always going to be attacked.
Yeah. I think for so many of us in recovery, at least initially, it was very hard for me, but to distinguish between my activity and my identity, like the things that I did and the person that I was. And I couldn't figure out why I always got so defensive when somebody would say something about my actions. And it was because I was so covered in shame, and I'd conflated the two. I thought that I was the mistakes that I'd made. For a lot of folks that are kind of walking in early recovery and trying to find out, you know, who they are in light of what they've done, it's so liberating, I think, for people to find the permission to, like, feel not okay. I don't think there's enough of that, you know. And opportunity to, like, you can lament the life without missing the lifestyle, you know, like, because it's a loss, you know, it's a loss, and it's like the closing of a chapter. And, but I think unless you don't, process some of that gunk and just it, if you just pretend like it's not there, all that trauma under the surface and all that pain under the surface, it's like a beach ball you're trying to keep under the water at the swimming pool, you know, and it requires so much effort and constant effort. And it's always popping up in places you don't expect it to. And you don't know why you're spontaneously crying or, you know, breaking things.
Well, the further you shove it down, the higher it flies up into
the
air.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's that identity piece there, like you talked about. Mm-hmm. If you have to die to that part of yourself, there's a mm-hmm. space of rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is where in recovery, like, just as a society, we fail people who are in recovery in that mm-hmm. because we don't help them build a new identity. We say, okay, you're not doing that anymore. Okay, well, now what? Because in that, I had some type of belonging. Mm-hmm. At least that felt normal. Doesn't mean it was good. Doesn't mean it was healthy. But if you can sit in a space and say, but this is my normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see that with abusive relationships. You see that with mm-hmm. eating disorders. You see that with, I mean, you name it, whatever type mm-hmm. of addiction you're dealing with, it's not always drugs or alcohol. Mm-hmm. At least this feels normal.
Mm-hmm.
At least I know how to react to this space.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when we put them in the space that, yeah, it might be safe and it might be quote unquote good, it's so foreign. Mm-hmm. And that discomfort mm-hmm. and loneliness mm-hmm. that so many people feel in recovery, I mean, that's the reason God gave us community. Yeah. We cannot do this alone, but mm-hmm. we also cannot sit and say it's a one-size-fits-all thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, a lot of things get passed to help people in addiction. You know, we just need to get them in a house.
Sure.
Okay, but we're looking at it from our eyes, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I have a home. Well, obviously, you just keep it clean, mm-hmm. and you do the things you're supposed to do, and you make sure you have toilet paper, and you make sure da-da-da-da-da-da. These people haven't had that set of skills given mm-hmm. to them. So then what do we have set them up for mm-hmm. failure. And so
it's almost unkind.
Really, though? Really, though?
It's an unkindness that yeah. that we celebrate, yeah. you know, as a victory.
Yeah. I mean, and this one's a little, but it's, you know, in the Holocaust, mm-hmm. when they found the Jewish people that were in mm-hmm. these prison encampments and they were starving to death and they were like, give them food. They just need to eat something. And it actually killed a number of them. Their stomachs were not equipped to handle it. Their bodies couldn't mm-hmm. handle it. And so, mm-hmm. but we say, right, if you said somebody's starving, give them food. Duh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously. It's not always that easy, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's, anyway, in this ministry, and those are the things that are so important, like for your story and mm-hmm. what you do, mm-hmm. right? And for somebody like me who has a background in this space, mm-hmm. is that we can come in and into it and say, it's just not that easy. Mm-hmm. It's just not put a Band-Aid on it and move it down the road. It's not just, this is making me uncomfortable. How can we clean it up?
That's right.
The great American problem.
Yeah. Because a lot of time, it's crazy because a lot of time we try and we think we're helping others, but really we're just like, resolving our own issues,
yes,
you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so we think we're there to come beside them and help them, but in reality, we're just trying to assuage our own discomfort, you know, and ease that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really more self-centered serving, you know.
It is, and it's a gain thing, too. You see that, you know, the best of intentions, right? And a lot of people sit in spaces that they shouldn't because it's their need is being met.
Yeah.
And so that's a discernment thing, too. And that's, you know, for anybody who is, you know, assisting somebody in recovery or trying to find a place to plug in. If you have faith, pray mm-hmm. into that space about what's an actual helpful thing, mm-hmm. I've seen somebody do that, so I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. No, you're made unique and special with a special set of gifts. Don't mm-hmm. try to do what somebody else did. Mm-hmm. You know, find your place, find yeah, your path, forge right. your own story, because that's really when you're going to mm-hmm. be of the most service, mm-hmm. right?
So what are you really excited about this next semester, the next several months ahead?
Yeah.
What are a couple things you're like, I'm really looking forward to that?
Yeah, so, and there's a lot like this. I told my husband, I said.
Going to jail?
Yeah, I'm so excited to go to jail, guys. I'm going to jail. They're going to let me in the jail. You know, I had to fill a lot of paperwork to go to jail. I'd like to mention that. It's not easy to get in there under other circumstances. So... Anyway, I'm very excited about that. That got approved to go in to be a volunteer mm-hmm. chaplain mm-hmm. at Southwest Virginia
Regional Jail Authority.
There it is. Bam, you know. And so I'm excited about that. I'm nervous as can be, though, too, because I want to do it well. Mm-hmm. I want to serve that space in a way that honors God, but in a way that serves those women. Mm-hmm. So I'm ultra excited, but I'm a little anxious, so we'll sit into that later.
That's real, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I've also, this semester is much busier than last semester. I've gone and started serving over at Mended Women mm-hmm. to do a Bible study with them. And that's so far, I feel like, well received. I'm mm-hmm. Looking forward to just, and not so much just the Bible study part. Like, yes, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. But getting to know these women and getting to understand like the needs and the mm-hmm. ebb and the flow, et cetera. And then also doing the Wednesday night Bible mm-hmm. study. And that's mm-hmm. for anybody mm-hmm. who wants to show up, we're at Blackbird Bakery, 7 o'clock, 7:30. I thought it was 7. But that was great. And you know, this week we just had two women there, but it was powerful. It was, and mm-hmm. it's exactly what God needed. Like that. I shouldn't say what God needed. That's exactly where God had us. Mm-hmm. In that moment, and so we were all able to really speak mm-hmm. into each other, mm-hmm. and it was a beautiful time. And it wasn't some pretty little plan that was mm-hmm. prepackaged for us. Like I just mm-hmm. I prayed and God gave me some space and some chapters, and we went from there, and it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. yeah, just do it, you know.
Yeah. So kind of circling back a little bit, a question that sort of came to my mind is if you know, and a lot of people they don't know who they are. It's like The Israelites, after they're free from slavery, when all they've known is 422 years under the lash of Pharaoh. And how have you found, or what are you discovering about, like, okay, I'm not with this crazy boyfriend, girlfriend in this insane situation. I don't have anybody telling me who I am. And I'm not doing the things that used to define me. So what is that process of, like, discovering the true self as God has made? Like, how do you walk with someone, helping them? Who am I?
Yeah. You know? And it's not again, like we talked about, this isn't just some cookie cutter, like, well, first this and sure. then that. I mean, the first step is always tell me what you think identity is.
Yeah.
Because people have different viewpoints of that. Mm-hmm. Like, tell me what, you know, what's your goal in finding out who you mm-hmm. are, right? Is it so that you can be successful? And what does success look like to you? Mm-hmm. So it's finding their language. I'm taking a Bible translating class, or the history of Bible translation class. And a big part of that is, like, translating, but it's in these people's language. And it's not just so simple as, like, English. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but think of all the slang we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially, what skibbity toilet riz? Come on, kids, do better. but all of that to say is, you know, we have to understand their language. And in order to do that, it just takes time. Mm-hmm. It takes understanding them. It takes getting to know them. It takes building trust. Mm-hmm. And then it takes, you know, a lot of prayer. Mm-hmm. If you're, you know, in your faith. Right?
Sure.
So, but it's consistency. It's showing up, mm-hmm. because that's usually lacking mm-hmm. in these spaces for these mm-hmm. people too. Like, the consistent thing is, their life was pain. Mm-hmm. It was suffering. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, their lack.
Yeah.
So how do we step into that place? What does it mean to you? What's your language there? You know, because for some people, success is literally not using anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just having enough money for basic stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's success. And other people, they've got big dreams. Mm-hmm. And so how do we support any of those spaces? Mm-hmm. And it takes time. And it takes the opposite of what most people are willing to give. It doesn't mm-hmm. take money. Mm-hmm. It takes your actual time. It takes from you. And if we're a good mm-hmm. steward of faith, what does that say? Mm-hmm. You're going to die to yourself to serve me. Mm-hmm. It's not about you. So if you're willing to step into the faith that God's given you, and to be that change, mm-hmm. to be that person, to be who God's made you to be, mm-hmm. it's not going to be out of your pocketbook mm-hmm. always. It's going to be from you.
Yeah. That's the hardest thing for us to get is like, ooh. You know, yeah. So money, like, we're pretty good at fundraising, and
yeah, right.
Also we need some. So hello.
Yeah. Friends.
but in getting people to cook for us, you know, all of that, mm-hmm. but the resistance that I feel sometimes is like, what I would love is just, would you guys just send people down to just, like, sit at tables with people and just ask them to tell you their story, like, just connect. And sometimes that is a challenge and a struggle because it's uncomfortable.
Oh yeah.
You know, especially if it's, like, out of your element, out of your zone.
Yeah. Don't feel equipped.
Yeah.
Yeah. And listen, it's a big ask. I'm over here saying, like, it's easy. No, I mean, I've been in this space for a long time, mm-hmm. you know, just sitting with people. So it's not, I'm not saying, like, well, just get over yourself. I mean, to a point, I guess, yes, I am. You know, don't live in fear, right? Because if God's for you, what can man do to you? Really, what can man do to you?
That's right.
So, yeah, I would say, if anything, on all of this, like, I just want to encourage people, like, mm-hmm. don't live in fear. Like, we're trying to help these people who are in their addiction and they're living in fear and they're crippled. Most of us are. Mm-hmm. To say, like, the addiction is, like, mm-hmm. oh, well, it's because you're bad. Mm-hmm. What does it look like for you? Where are you not living into who God has you to be? Mm-hmm. Where are you being less than in your life? How can you step into these spaces? Mm-hmm. And it might have nothing to do with the table ministry, but in your life, to yeah. be encouraged, to be a good steward of the gifts God has given you. Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
Yeah.
And how can you pray into that?
That's a good word. That's a good word. Well, we're so grateful for you,
and also with you.
Thank you for your time and you, just the way you love our people it's beautiful. So we thank you for that, and we thank you, friend, for joining us today on this episode of Come to the Table. We hope that it has been an encouragement to your recovery, or created in you a curiosity of what it could look like to live into a more selfless mindset. Of your dedication to serving others. And if you have any questions about our ministry, want to get involved, or know someone that could use some support, you can reach out to us at thetablebristol117@gmail.com. Friend, I just want to tell you, do not have to walk this road alone, that beauty from ashes, light from dark, dancing from morning, all these things are possible. And if there's any way we can support you, please reach out. Grace and peace to you, my friend.